Blog Talk Radio.
Well, all right. We've got a show this week. We're talking hoops here in Seattle, and I'm looking forward to it, which should be a really fantastic show. We've got some great people going on here today to talk about all the news that's fit to talk about in the world of hoops, and maybe even a few other things. We'll just see where it goes. I'm pretty sure hoops is going to be the order of the day. And I'm very pleased to welcome a man who has a show of his own, Lidline Sports, that he does on Facebook, I know. And that would be from Seattle, Granville Emerson. Granville, you on the line?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Fantastic. Well, tell us a little bit about Lidline Sports. So I did my best to interview, to preview you, but what is exactly the mission and the substance of Lidline?
Well, the mission of Lidline Sports is simply just to talk about sports from my perspective. National sports, the major ones, NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball. We may get into some hockey, some MLS, depending on what it is. Definitely the Sounders here. And we do local focus on sports in Seattle Seahawks, Mariners, University of Washington football, basketball, that kind of stuff. And we want it to be entertaining and fun. And so my partner and I, Renault Pepe Bean, we just kind of have fun talking about what's going on in the sports world from that perspective.
And I've noticed recently you've branched off into the hard news arena a little bit. Not that it's easy to determine it. It's hard to see between the TMZs and the NBCs and the Foxes and all. They're all kind of blending together. But I noticed you go do a little bit of news as well. Do you do just the two shows separately, or do they ever cross over into
Lidline
one
news
program?
Are you talking about,
yes,
Lidline News?
Yes.
Lidline News was the original thing that I did on the internet, and it was just a spoof on the news, just kind of like a Saturday Night Live type headline news thing. The name Lidline actually came from like the lid that you wear on your head.
Sure.
So like,
yeah,
it's a play on headline, so Lidline.
Right.
And so, yeah, so I've been doing that for a few years now. It's just a fun thing for me to,
yeah,
do, to just get some news out there and try to make it light and kind of humorous. And then, of course, sometimes you have to delve into some difficult subjects, and like the four soldiers that were killed over in Niger.
Sure.
But to make the whole that 5-minute highlight kind of light and humorous if you can. That's kind of my motivation behind that.
Right. Well, humor can very often be a really good way to deal with very important topics. I mean, one of the great heroes of that I personally like as an artist is a guy named Lenny Bruce, who was a comic in the 50s and the 60s, and he had a kind of a rough life, but he was known to kind of come out and tell jokes that were, you know, way over the line as far as what was allowed to be talked about. But he was so entertaining and funny that a lot of people, before he got too messed up with the drug thing, were really drawn. It was a way for people to really rally around, you know, different causes and things. But I think it's a great thing you're doing. And I wanted to say, just first of all, I know also that you do quite a bit of coaching in the Seattle area. Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, I'm a boys varsity basketball assistant at Seattle Prep High School, and I also coach AAU. I've coached for a number of different organizations. Basically, how it works in the WIA, the governing body for high school athletics, is you can't coach your own kids during the summertime, so I have to move around to AAU organizations to avoid the kids that play at Seattle Prep. Last summer, I coached for Friends of Hoop. It's probably the top or number two AAU organization in the state, and I've had the privilege of being able to coach there for, I don't know, 7 years on and off. I've coached kids like Zach Levine, plays for the Chicago Bulls now. It's one of the kids that I coached. Joe Harris coached him at 16
sure.
and 17. He's playing for the New Jersey Nets now. So it's been a good experience for me. I have coached, I don't know how many kids that have gone on to play college basketball at a variety of different levels. Had a kid that plays for me now, Nick Lynch, just committed to Lehigh this past week. Another kid that I've worked with for a number of years, I coached his brother at Friends of Hoop, and he wanted me to help him learn how to play basketball. So he went to, he's a senior at Bothell now, but he just committed to the UC Riverside, Jake Medjo. So I'm just all around in the high school basketball arena.
That sounds great, man. It sounds like you really are doing it. And so Friends of Hoop, you probably remember Jim Marsh and all the things he was doing for a long time.
Goes with Jim for a number of years. Traveled around the country with him. He's a great guy with a whole bunch of great stories.
Let me tell you,
Sonics, a radio announcer, Portland Trailblazer player. Played USC. In the car with him, and he's calling Bill Walton and all kind of people on the phone. It's hilarious.
Yeah, well, you know, Jim's a character. I like him a lot, and I've known him for a long time.
He's a great guy.
And he is a great guy, and I endorse what he's doing. So aside from that, we can get started chronologically. Let's talk. Well, I guess first of all, the question for me, and I'm not even sure really, did you have a playing career prior to being a coach?
No, I did not.
it's someone who likes the game.
I played basketball all my life, but for whatever reason, I never actually made it onto a team. I played high school football. I started for the Franklin Quakers as a quarterback. Basketball, I don't know what happened. I mean, even including my senior year of college at Long Beach State, the basketball coach came up to me in the bookstore and asked me to come out and play on the team. And I was like, Coach, I'm getting ready to graduate. I'm not going to do that. So fast forward that I'm coaching, I wish I would have took him up on his offer. Because that's the number one question I get. Where did you play?
So, well, it certainly is, as you well know, it's a short window that you can spend doing that in your life to being a player. So, I played a little basketball too, just because I loved it so much. But I just, you know, about the same time when I was about 16 or something, I decided I was going to do something else with my career. And it sounds like you did the same thing.
You know, Jim, it's kind of funny how it all works out. So I went to school in Southern California, and people you can't really grasp this unless you actually experienced it. I'm in a predominantly black fraternity, which there are four major ones. I'm in Omega Psi Phi, and then there's Alpha Kappa Alpha, Kappa Alpha Psi, and Phi Beta Sigma. We're in Los Angeles. Just think about the size of the city. So every spring we played at Inglewood High fraternity basketball games. So of those fraternities, it would be the best college players in Los Angeles playing on each of those teams from that fraternity. So we had each team had really good players, and I played and started on my team, and I was like the only one who had not played high school or college basketball. And so we played in Inglewood High for 8 weeks in front of like 2,000 or 3,000 people. So that's where I really get a lot of my experience. You know what I mean? In terms of in terms of being able to play with poise in difficult environments, because here you are playing in front of 2,000 or 3,000 of your peers. People would come from all over California to go to these games. The fraternities that had pledges online, they would bring their pledges to the game. So it was quite an event. You know, you know what I mean? And so just to be able to have that experience helps me to coach kids and to be able to focus and play and perform in that kind of environment was difficult at best. And so I know from that experience kind of, you know, what kids are dealing with, especially like at Seattle Prep, when I think 5 out of the last 7 years we've gone to the state tournament.
Right. And it produced a lot of great players. I remember the years way back with when you're kicking out guys like Spencer Hawes and Martell Webster. I don't know if you were involved with the program back then, but there's always been D1 guys. Exactly. Out of Seattle Prep. In fact, just this last year, we had Nick Pryor and Aaron Nettles, both of whom are, you know, went on to you know, signed with college teams. I guess Nate is doing some other things this year, and I'm not sure what's going on. Maybe you can fill in Seattle fans on what's going on with Nate Pryor, and then tell us what you think of
I don't know what's going on with Nate Pryor. I don't know what's going on with Nate Pryor. I went to the University of Washington practice on Thursday, and I did not see Nate at practice, and I had forgotten that he had signed with the University of Washington, and hadn't thought about it till you just brought his name up. And so I don't know what's going on with him. I know that they were having some difficulty getting him into the school. So I don't know if that's the reason why or if he got enrolled in school or not. I'm not aware. But I'm going to find out.
Well, we can maybe you can text me and we can break it on our show next week or something. But Nate is a great player, and he sure looked good this last couple of years down there with you guys. You know, so it sounds to me like he's got a future in basketball if he wants to.
You know, Nate played for West Seattle.
What am I thinking? Okay, he didn't play for Seattle, though. I get you were about that. He played against us.
We lost to him.
I was just walking off the cliff. Okay, I got him confused. Sorry about that. Okay, now this is all coming back to me. Okay, thank you very much, Granville. And Aaron played for Seattle Prep. Okay, got it. So now why am I confusing that? Well, let's not even worry about that. I'm just barely. I was glad to my first cup of coffee. So there's that. So for some reason I got those two confused, and for some reason had it in my mind that they played together. Maybe it was some other format that I saw them play together. Anyway, aside from that,
did you watch him play in the high school All-Star game or something?
It might have been that situation.
Okay.
I didn't see him in person. I might have seen the podcast is what it maybe kind of, for some reason, made that impression. So I don't know if we can make an excuse for me right now, but I'm going to leave it at that. So back to Aaron Nettle. Let's move to that, because this will be a nice segue, because we can move to something that does have some meat here. Aaron Nettles is playing for Seattle U, and you coached him last year. Tell us about Aaron and what he's done and what you're thinking about as far as Seattle youth in general this coming year.
Well, Aaron Nettles played varsity for us at Seattle Prep for 4 years. And that's rare. It's rare that a freshman plays varsity and actually gets playing time. Fond memory of Aaron as a freshman. He hits a three-pointer at the buzzer to send the game into overtime against O'Day, and we win. Understand now that O'Day and Seattle Prep is the oldest rivalry in the city of Seattle, over 100-some years old. And so it's always a big game. So for a freshman to make a big shot in that big game is a big thing. And then he went on to big things. He's one of our all-time leading scorers at Seattle Prep. Has a great, and I mean great, jump shot. I understand that he is going to get some quality playing time at Seattle U, and that's great to see because he's got a lot. I think that he has a lot more in his basketball game than he actually showed at Seattle Prep. And according to the WIA rules, you're not allowed to coach your kids except for what's called in season. So June and July – in the summer, you can coach your own kids. So since I was coaching for Eastside Basketball Club, which was Aaron's AAU team, and they had Aaron and Colin Welp, who went to UC Irvine, played for Seattle Prep, on the team, we were in California at the at a tournament down there in Anaheim. And so I don't know, a bunch of stuff happened. I ended up coaching them in this tournament. And we won the tournament.
Okay.
And Aaron played so phenomenally well in that tournament. I've never seen him play in a Seattle Prep uniform as well as he played in that tournament. And so I can really see if he's gotten to Seattle U and has maybe let all the pressure of being the man at Seattle Prep off his shoulders – and is just playing now, he's going to be a great addition to their team.
Yeah, I've been impressed with what I've seen from him. Tell me about I know that Seattle U's got a new coach down there, Jim Hayford, who also has done a real good job, and over at Eastern, and you know, really won a lot of games for them in the Big Sky, and brought some players along pretty well that have gone on to success professionally too, actually. And he's done a really good job. I know he's replacing Cameron Dollar, who's over now at UW, again back at UW. And Jim is brought in some grad transfers over there. One guy was one of the main rotation players when the Wisconsin team that was in the Final Four, Jordan Hill. And there's a number of other guys too of note that they brought in, some of who were having to sit out a year and some who were able to play right away. And they have the guys from last year still that are hanging in there too. Have you done anything to check out the Seattle U program so far this year?
No, I have not. I have not.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to be keeping involved with that and kind of, I know I'll definitely be keeping on top of that. And you know, that's one thing. I think they're a program that is in a league that's a little bit more winnable than the Pac-12, I think, in regards to the Huskies.
I think it's the weakest league in the country.
Well, there we go. I'm glad you made a statement. Why do you feel that way? I'm curious.
I just think that, I mean, they don't have any teams. You have New Mexico State, and
yep,
they basically win it every year because there's no competition. I mean,
right.
This year, now they have Grand Valley out of Arizona, which is
Grand Canyon.
Is up and coming.
Got it. Grand Canyon.
What'd you say? Oh, Grand Canyon. Grand Valley?
Yeah.
Yeah, Grand Canyon, which is up and coming. But other than that, the schools are, you know, I don't know. I can't even name them. Like University of Texas at I don't know, by the San Antonio River. I don't know what the name of the school is. But
Listen State's an entry-level conference for D1 programs. It seems like that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
That's a nice way of putting it. But, yeah, there's some teams on there. Actually, Grand Canyon is going to compete pretty well. They've got Casey Benson, who was starting point guard for the Ducks for a couple of years, and he's a grad transfer. He's down there. They're going to have some players. That's going to be a team that's going to compete pretty well. And they were competitive last year before he was involved too. And of course, Bakersfield has had some good teams. Apparently they're going to be fairly good too.
When you think of, you know, the top conferences, you don't think of schools like Bakersfield. Bakersfield has definitely always been a perennially good basketball team. You know what I mean? Basketball program. But they should not, if you're a school like Seattle U, you should not have any problem recruiting against those schools.
Mm-hmm.
None whatsoever, especially when your home arena is Key Arena.
So
right.
Let me ask you this.
You've
then,
got
Granville.
The city of
mm-hmm. Why is it that Seattle U has been recruiting pretty well here this year with Jim Hayford, and Cameron did get some good players in there. Why is it that they've had problems competing in that league? I guess it's because New Mexico State was just a little bit better, but what's your thought?
Well, my thought is this. I'll be totally honest. I think Cameron Dollar is a great recruiter and a great assistant coach. I've watched him for 7 years. I didn't think he was a very good game coach. Okay. So I have nothing bad to say about him. I'm just, its record speaks for itself. So you go back to the beginning when he got there, they were averaging around 5,000 fans. Am I correct? Do you remember those days?
5,000 fans for Seattle U basketball?
Yeah.
When he got there?
And
yeah, that's true. The first year he started there?
In his first year. I think they were like 17 and 14 that year, and they were averaging around 5,000 fans because there's a big alumni presence at Seattle. It's a Seattle school. People want to support Seattle U basketball. When I was a kid,
oh yeah,
you could go to Seattle U games, and they would, when Clint Richardson played, they'd be packed.
Right.
They used to play their games at the big games at the Coliseum, and then their regular games they played at the Seattle Center Arena.
Right.
They average around 5,000. That's probably the mark for them. Maybe more now since the population has tripled since then in Seattle.
Yeah.
But if you put together a winning program at Seattle U, you're going to get fans. It's just going to happen. So they had 5,000, but they started losing every year.
Years
that he was there. So they had a losing record. So it's hard to recruit kids when you're losing. And it's hard to recruit kids when now that you're down to playing in a 2,000 seat gym.
Yeah, you know, I get that too, but I think also that they were just starting in D1 and the first couple of years, I think three years, they weren't eligible to go to the NCAA tournament.
They started in D1 under Calero. So there have been a number of schools that started in D1 and did way better than Seattle U.
Okay.
So that's not, to me, that's not the issue. They started in D1 under Joe Calero. They hired Cameron Dollar to take them to the next level. With Calero's players, he was 17 and 14. After that, they started losing. So, if you're asking me the question, in my opinion.
Sure, I asked you.
They should have been able to, especially in the conferences they were in, put together winning seasons. But they didn't. And that had nothing to do with them starting off in D1. Because they had already been in D1 and had established a winning record at the Division I level, but then they just fell off. That's just my opinion.
But there was such a big break in there between when they were a winning kind of successful D1 program in Seattle back, like you mentioned, Clint Richardson and all those guys, whole era was basically so far ago that it just all that support is kind of evaporated. I mean, they kind of brought it back and they started doing that with some of the alums. Go ahead.
But Jim, they were back. They were averaging 5,000 fans. They had a winning record. You have to sustain that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They didn't sustain it.
You know something?
So
I think you might be right. Were they really in D1 with Joe Calero? Okay.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were.
But they couldn't go to the tournament, correct?
No, they didn't go to the tournament, but they were in Division I. They only brought in Cameron Dollar to bring them to the next level. So let's go across. Let's go down the road. Okay.
Okay.
When the UW was going to Sweet 16s, you could not get a ticket to get into American Airlines Arena.
True.
Right.
Correct.
Last year, you could give away tickets and people wouldn't go. Why?
Because they're losing.
What's the difference?
They were losing.
Yes. It wasn't because they had just gotten a D1.
No.
You know what I mean? Because they were losing.
Yeah.
You got to win.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, I guess I get it, but it's a. But the thing is, also Seattle U couldn't go to the tournament for the first couple of years, so they weren't in a conference really or anything. It was just all
What did that have to do with them going 17 and 14 and winning and averaging 5,000 fans? They had the same parameters.
Right. Well, you know, I guess we'll have to take a look at this. I think you're making a very good point. So now that they've got Jim Hayford and they're sitting where they're at right now, and they've got some grad transfers, and they've got, you know, they got this new system. We'll just have to see how they do. They're in, like you mentioned, a league that's
as easy as you're going to want. I don't know if it's the easiest league in America. It's a pretty big country. You think there's easy? Not an easier league?
Do you know a league that's easier, Jim? Jim, off the top of your head.
Well, I sure don't offhand. I can't. That was a heck of a statement, and I enjoyed it. But I can't honestly tell you.
I just challenge you to find an easier one.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and do that because I'm not really prepared because I haven't really looked at that closely. I would have thought that there would have been easier ones out there, but that's going to probably be a large discussion. And I've got another guest coming on in 5 minutes. So I wanted to press you in one issue that we're hoping to maybe discuss would be the Washington Huskies and Lorenzo Romar. I'll just make it brief and then I'll give you a chance to talk. I feel it was a huge mistake to fire Lorenzo, and I'll let you tell me if you agree or disagree.
Are you finished?
I'm finished now. Yeah. I'm going to start
okay.
with you. I think
I
it was a huge mistake. What do you
I'm
think?
Sorry.
No, I'm sorry.
I look at it like this. Like, I love Lorenzo Romar. Do not get me wrong. I love Lorenzo Romar. He was great for the University of Washington. He actually had people thinking that the University of Washington athletic program was about the basketball program first and the football program second. And I had to constantly tell people, University of Washington will always be a football school.
Right.
Even if
sure.
they're 0-12.
Right.
So
sure.
he did great things, but we all know that sports, especially as it relates to coaching, is what have you done for me lately? And they were not winning, and the program had fallen off, and people had stopped coming to the games. And I went to a lot of games, and I knew the handwriting was on the wall. After they lost to UCLA, I don't know what the score was. I think they lost by 60-something points. And I promise you, I parked in the back lot, like right behind the arena. By the time I got out of my seat to the car, I heard about 5 or 6 alumni saying that Lorenzo Romar had to go. All right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Kind of how it is. And so this is what I feel happened. I feel like the transition of Lorenzo Romar assistant coaches did not work for him. So
mm-hmm.
when you had Dollar and Ken Bone and leaving somebody out here,
Jim Shaw, Rafael Chilius.
Before Chilius, he coached the big dudes. What's his name? He's going to be mad at me if he ever heard this. And I don't remember
Russ
his name.
Shaney. Russ Shaney.
No.
Russ
who was
Shaney.
The big man's coach. That was before
Paul
I got
Fortier.
Back to Seattle.
Paul Fortier.
Yeah, and Paul
yeah,
Fortier.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
All of those guys could teach Lorenzo Romar's offense and defensive concepts. By the end of Lorenzo Romar's tenure, he was really the only one that could teach his offensive and defensive concepts. Do you get what I'm saying?
Right.
And so
sure.
when you're the only coach that can teach your offensive and defensive concepts, the details of those concepts fall through the cracks.
That's correct.
Does that make sense? Okay.
It does.
And so they run the same man-to-man team defense that we run in Seattle Prep. And I would go to practices, and I would see Lorenzo teaching. But I would not see anybody doing what myself and the other assistant coaches do at Seattle Prep and being in the minute details of their rotations, how they help, how they cover down the help, the communication, and all of that that goes into there. And you saw that play out in their games.
Okay. Now I'm going to cut you short. Go ahead, go ahead. I was going to just cut you short because I want to make a point just while we're on this specific topic, and then I'll let you finish. Basically, that is correct. And here's what happened. Lorenzo Romar assembled a staff in order to assemble the kind of talent that he needed
to actually get into the NCAA tournament. Who got into the NCAA tournament in the Pac-12 this last year? Oregon, USC, UCLA, and Arizona. We're not going to have a debate on how they got their talent as opposed to how Lorenzo recruits. But what happened is that he got a staff together that could allow him to assemble the talent to be able to compete on that level. What he fell short was having the guys that can coach him. But he did succeed in bringing that talent together. And I believe, from what I know from sources, that Cameron would have been back this year, regardless to him being fired or not. And that would have definitely helped coaching defense specifically. And I think that, you know, they couldn't really fire Michael Porter Sr., but I think he might have possibly done a better job in his second year of helping him coach, if had it stuck for him, especially at the fact that Michael Porter Jr. there and Jonte Porter Jr., who's probably going to end up being a top 10 pick or better. And so the key thing is he did an unbelievable thing, and you know from coaching basketball and from just the entire scope of basketball that college basketball is not solely coaching. It's about 50% coaching and having talent, getting talent together that you can get to produce. So I think that what happened was, and I got my other guest coming on the line, but he'll be fine to hang through this topic because he's a Washington basketball guy. I think that what happened was that he did what he needed to do to get to really bring the program back, and the AD and the boosters and the others that we referenced that sort of stood in there at the end of that UCLA game and thought that he should be fired just plain didn't understand the process that he was having to go through to actually be competitive in that league and do things the way that he did them. And I believe that's what happened. What do you think, Granville?
So I listened to Jen Cohn, the athletic director, talk about why they let him go. Okay.
Yeah.
And I listened to Lorenzo Romar talk about why they let him go. And from what I got from both of those two conversations was that she had no confidence in him being able to do what he said that he would do. And there was no evidence to support him in terms of if they gave him another year, would they be successful, even with the talent they were bringing in? There was no guarantee for that, okay? And so what Lorenzo lacked in the eyes of Jen Cohn was a proven philosophy going forward. So I'm going to tell you what was his demise. This was his demise. His demise is when he hired Brad Jackson from Western Washington, brought him in, and said, now we're going to run this high-post offense. This is what we're going to do, and you can count on us doing it. And then he scrapped it after maybe five or six games. Mm-hmm. And from then on, they never had a philosophy. He could not articulate to Jim Cohn what their style of player philosophy would be going forward. His old philosophy where he played three to four guards and they ran, pressed, and trapped that got him to two sweet 16, he went away from. And he went away from that to go to the high post offense. And then when that didn't pan out because he didn't get the players that he thought he was going to get to run it, then he was kind of lost. And it did not help him that he recruited he had a serious run of one-and-done players.
Yeah.
Okay. And so when you have a run of one and done players like that, you're basically playing a young team. This goes back to him not having the coaches that could teach the minute details of his offense and defensive schemes.
Okay. Well, I feel that he was right there. I feel it was a complete and total blunder to fire him because I think he would have had the talent this year. With the players coming back, and most importantly, the players coming in. You saw what happened with Nathan Hale last
year.
You were not.
How do you know
what was going on. What's that?
How do you,
go ahead,
Jim? How do you know this? He had two dudes that left and went to the NBA, and they were terrible. So
they were
how
freshmen.
Do you know this?
So I do know that because they were all freshmen.
That's freshmen.
We got a great conversation going. I wish we could go on. I got another guy. Actually, why don't I introduce him? John Hernandez, are you on the line?
Are you there?
I'm here, Jim.
Well, we got a great conversation. I think Granville's bringing up some great points. And Granville, you want to stick around while we talk about with John Hernandez, who's works on the Husky basketball blog.
If it's okay with
John,
I don't want to take his time.
No. He's interested in this kind of discussion. We were hoping to make it a group discussion anyway. So your point, I'm going to go ahead and counter your point, because here's how he could have done that. It's because he had done it before at Washington, and I believe he had the talent to do it now. And, well, you Michael Porter. One second. Grandpa, you saw Michael Porter Jr. play last year. You don't think that with Michael Porter Jr. that he could have won more games? And, by the way, the attendance wasn't as bad. I'd like to correct you on one thing, because you were so kind, in a very nice way, correct me about Nate Pryor in West Seattle. The attendance last year was actually not that bad. It was actually an uptick from the year before at Heck at this last year, but I think partially because of Markelle Fultz. But nonetheless, when you look at what happened, I don't know the facts, but I do know it was better. It was a little slightly better. I looked at the end of the year. Yeah. So,
they were terrible the year before, too. Go ahead.
That's right. They were terrible the year before, too. And that was the year that they had DeJounte Murray and Marquese Chriss. And those guys, Marquese Chriss was foul prone. He was a freshman. And DeJounte Murray, it was not a good shooter. The truth of the matter is that they did win games when DeJounte Murray played well, but he often played well against teams that didn't have legitimate big men. He would force it a lot in the paint. And Pac-12 level bigs, and for that matter, pro level bigs, were a real challenge for him. He's done a great job of really developing his game with San Antonio. But the long and short of it is that he got stuffed a lot by guys like Arizona. And that's why they weren't able to get to the one more win they would have needed to make the NCAA tournament. They only need to win one more game, and they failed to do that with a team full of freshmen. There was two guys who were upperclassmen on that team, one of which was not even part of the rotation, Donovan Dorsey. There was only Andrew Andrews, and everybody else was either a freshman or Malik Dime was a junior college transfer that had been playing basketball for three and a half years. So it was just a very young team, and Lorenzo got them to within one win of the tournament. It was, you know, then you talk about the years before that. They had Upshaw, where they beat Oklahoma and Buddy Hield, and then he flittered away his opportunity, and they ended up – they had a team that should have gotten the NCAA tournament that year and probably would have, but that whole thing fell apart once he was gone. And then two other years they came very close also with teams with C.J. Wilcox. And then the first year of that run of no tournaments, they won the Pac-12 outright, and were not given the NCAA tournament bid, which was completely ridiculous and awful. He had a long run of kind of failure, and I think you make a good point about Brad Jackson. But I do not think throwing away the opportunity to have Michael Porter Jr. play at University of Washington and the rest of that class was by any means the right thing to do. I want you to give you an opportunity to respond to that, Graham. Go ahead. Sorry.
I actually want to give Leon the opportunity since this is his time. Leon, you have a
John Hernandez. Actually, okay. I will go ahead and do it. That's I wanted because I was responding to you. But let's go ahead and give John an interview. John, you go by the name Dog Blog, and it also I'd like to mention to the listeners. John, what do you think of what I just said? Since we're just coming in on the Husky basketball question, what do you think right off the bat of what I just said?
I do. Well, first of all, I want to thank Granville and invite him to the Seattle Times comment board because I think he gets it. I think he understands where we're at with Husky basketball. I think he has a good mix of views. You know, he's not on one side or the other side, but he kind of seems in the middle, and he's very educated.
Good. I agree.
Thank you for you know, having me on, Jim. I'm excited to be here and excited to represent the Seattle Times Husky basketball blog. When I tuned in, you know, I heard you talk about It's about a mix of talent and coaching.
Yes.
And I think that's what the board is, you know, debating right now. You know, we have a lot of people who rue the day that Lorenzo Romo was fired, and we have a lot of fans who are excited about Coach Hopkins. And when you talk about why they don't appreciate the firing of Lorenzo, it has to do with the loss of talent. When you talk about why they look forward to Coach Hopkins, it has to do with his coaching and his energy. You know, I think one thing that gets overlooked is the value and integrity that Lorenzo Romo brought to our program. That doesn't get discussed much. I think that's accepted. I think that's something the board all agrees was a value and a trait of his and was much appreciated. And hopefully we can see that in Coach Hopkins. I think the thing that they both like to do is they both like to develop talent. So we have a lot of really smart guys on the blog, one of which is Ross B.I. And, you know, he's kind of like you two. He just knows a lot about Husky basketball, very in-depth. He can remember details about every year. And I think for the most part, we listen to his analysis a lot. To answer your question, I think the one reason why I can say that I don't know if Lorenzo could do it with Michael Porter Jr. and his brother Jontay Porter, who at the time had not reclassified to 2017, but I think we all knew he was. I think the reason we don't know if Lorenzo could do it, we just look at this past season. You know, we had a number one draft pick come through our program, Markel Fultz, and we couldn't bring that team together. So even though we had talent in Markel, you know, sure, we lost Chris, we lost Murray. You know, could Lorenzo have done it with Murray and Chris? I think so. But could he have done it with Jontay and his older brother, Michael? I think so. You know, one person, it's difficult to make a difference. We all saw Andrew's senior year. You know, he carried that team on his back.
He totally
Markel
did.
He did his best. But, you know, the confidence in Lorenzo just wasn't there. So there's something to Jen Cohen's story. Was it the wrong time? Yeah. Could they have waited another year? Yeah. But the confidence wasn't there because he didn't do it with Markel. He didn't do it with a lot of highly talented players. And I think that's my biggest knock on Lorenzo was his personal management. You know, he had a lot of great core role players, but he just failed to support them. And I heard Granville talk about, you know, the downfall of the program. You know, I'm of belief that it potentially could have came when he had the great recruiting gap of 2012, 2013, where he didn't recruit anybody.
Yep.
And that gap just can't take place. You know, I think he brought on Mark McLaughlin. You know,
I think
you've
got to say 2011, too, because the only thing that happened out of that class really was Tony Roten, and he was a one and done. So, yeah, but there was very little. And Andrew Andrews, who, you know, was good, and Gernard Giroux got a little bit of playing time, but he ended up transferring and not really panning out too much as a big time college basketball player. But yeah, I think you make some great points, John. And I think that you really have to look at the recruiting part. I think that it's a generalization, Granville, to say that Lorenzo always had great players and that he had NBA first round draft picks, and that's why he should have won, when they're one and done guys, you know, and he's got around them not enough talent or too young of talent. I think if you look at what the team could be with, you know, a core of juniors now this year, and then this group of young players that's coming up with the class that they could have assembled. And keep in mind also, Granville, that they had the spring signing class of been signing period of also to possibly even add to that group. But go ahead, Granville, what do you think?
So Jim, I think you're on both sides of the coin there.
okay.
Because
let's hear it.
Because if you're saying that they should have kept him to bring in this class, right?
Right.
This highly touted freshman class.
Mm-hmm.
There are only so many scholarships. So you're going to have to get rid of some kids to bring in those five. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And anybody that's played sports,
mm-hmm.
from middle school through college, will tell you that the biggest jump that you make is from eighth grade to ninth grade and from mm-hmm. your senior year of high school to your freshman year of college. There mm-hmm. are no guarantees that if you were graded as an eighth grader that you're going to be great as a ninth grader. There's no guarantees that if you were great as a senior, you're going to be great as a freshman. Just like you illustrated all the deficiencies that DeJounte Murray had as a freshman.
Sure.
Michael
True.
Porter Jr., as good as he is, as great as he is, I'm watching him on tape. He has a lot of deficiencies that will get exposed at the college level. Okay? And
okay.
so just because you bring in these recruits does not mean that you're going to win with those recruits. And Lorenzo Romar, who had brought in NBA talent, was not able to win with that NBA talent. And so as an athletic director, you're saying to yourself, okay, should I give him another year? What has he done in the last 3 years that warrants me giving him another year, especially if he can't tell me what his philosophy is going forward?
Okay.
You hear what I'm saying?
So
I'm just looking at it from that perspective. Okay. And then you also have to look at the fact that Lorenzo Romar was the dean of Pac-12 coaches. There's nobody in the Pac-12 that has lasted as long as he has. And so in mm-hmm. today's sports, you basically get 3 years to make it happen, to get where the program where you say you want your program to go. And then if you get there within those 3 years, then they give you some more time. But you can't go more than 3 years without being a winner after you've been a winner without losing your job. It just doesn't really happen.
Well, okay, I'm gonna go ahead and pass this one over to John. I got some thoughts about that, but I don't want to give you an opportunity to respond, so we're having the three-way conversation. What do you think, John?
Sure. Number one, you could go back 6 years if you're looking at poor performance for Lorenzo. And, again, you know, he had that recruiting gap. I think that hurt him. He had that high post offense. I think that hurt the players. A couple of bad statistics for Lorenzo, 9-22. You know, you have 9 wins, 22 losses. I don't know what was going on with Fultz in terms of, you know, was it his health? Was he trying to rest a sore knee? He kind of seems to have some knee issues in the NBA and some shoulder issues that he's dealing with. So perhaps there's some longevity issues there with his health. Still, he was taken number one, so I've got to think that he's going to be able to work through those. But 9-22, that's a tough statistic for Romar. Also, when you look at his point spread, his winning teams, they usually had great offense,
mm-hmm.
and they usually had really good defense. Sometimes not the best defense, and they won with their points, with their offense. But this last year, he had the biggest point spread between his offensive points and his defensive points in his tenure at Washington. It was -4.7. And the only year that was worse or that was near that was in a negative besides that one was his first year. And then the year he had the recruiting gap in 2013-2014. So that's when we lost it out on Aaron Gordon. That defense has to be shored up. With Hopkins, you know, I'm a little bit worried here that the team is going to take some time to learn his version of the zone defense.
Mm-hmm.
That could produce a similar result this year. You know, I think we're, you know, a lot of us are just waiting for that payout. I love watching the senior corps. You know, so I love bringing the attention to Washington. When I first tuned into your show, Jim, it was all about Washington, and I loved it. I mean, we were talking about players way down on the depth chart, you know,
right.
And I want to try to get back to that. You know, we lost Quinn Barnard, you know, this year, and we gained Jason Crandall. You know, Jason Crandall, I think he was a 2-star recruit out of Issaquah. and he was a team manager. So that's something I learned on the blog just today, that Jason Crandall was a team manager for Lorenzo Romar, and he got brought on as a walk-on this year. And so I think there's a legacy that Lorenzo's leaving behind. I think that's a testament to his dean status in the conference. And so I love what we're talking about here, and I want to talk more about it. So
okay,
this is going good.
Yeah, it is going good. And I just wanted to respond to Granville. I think that, you make some good points, but I think and so do you, John. I think that basically, I just don't. I'm just going to go with my gut instinct and tell you that I think that Michael Porter Jr. is going to be a lot bigger force this year in college basketball. Again, you do bring up things that he did last year that maybe he's going to be exposed in D1. The other night, Missouri played even with Kansas, ended up losing to them by 6 points, Kansas, number 3 team in the country. Missouri is going to be a much improved team, and I think that you'll find at the end of this year and come next June when he's drafted number 1 and within the next 3 to 5 years when he becomes an NBA superstar in the making, very similarly to Carmelo Anthony and Kevin Durant and that
disagree.
Type of level player. That he will, you will look
disagree.
At that and say, this was a huge blunder to let that type of a legacy slip from the program.
But Jim, we just had the number 1 player in the NBA draft drafted out of the University of Washington.
I know, and he played with a bunch of guys who were having a bad year, and he got injured for a lot of the year, and it was right in the middle of Pac-12. So they just totally gutted their Pac-12 chances. It would have been an adequate team at best with him.
I think you're blaming the players, okay?
Okay.
I'm saying their problem. Did you watch them? I know you watched them play.
I watched them all year long. Yeah, sure. Sure.
What was their problem? Was defense?
Absolutely, and that's why I'm saying that they would have brought Cameron Dollar on, and he would have helped them.
It goes back. Yes, it goes back to my first point. So yeah, they brought Cameron Dollar back. But my point is when you're the athletic director sitting across from this coach, how can you really say that just because you're bringing in these players that you're going to all of a sudden return to Sweet 16 glory?
I'll tell you what. You haven't done anything with the players you had. No, well, it's not true. They haven't done anything with the players they had. They beat Oklahoma with Buddy Hield, with Nigel Williams, Andrew Andrews, and Robert.
You can win one game. When did they go to the NCAA tournament?
They won the Pac-12 outright in 2012, but they weren't admitted because it was the biggest bunch of baloney ever. When was the last time they went to the NCAA? They went to the NCAA tournament and they lost to Carolina in the second round in North Carolina. If you can think of such a ridiculous seeding.
When was the last time they went to the tournament, Jim?
2011.
What year is it now?
It's 2017. That's not the point.
How
I've been watching Husky
that?
Basketball. Granville, you and I both grew up in Seattle, I believe. I was watching basketball. I was down there watching George Irvin play. What have you done for me lately?
You cannot lose for 3 to 5 consecutive years after you've been to the tournament. Do you think I'm not really a blogger, but sometimes I'll just kind of read the blogs and stuff.
Sure. Uh-huh.
Everybody talks about how the basketball fans, how they want the University of Washington to be like Kentucky and be like these at Kansas and be like, do you think that they would let a coach lose for not go to the tournament for 6 or 7 years and still keep the coach?
Let me ask this question. Do you think that the FBI is going to let Kentucky do what they've been doing for 50 years?
No, okay, let's not get into that. I'm just talking about –
Do you think
they would let those teams, perennial teams like that, have a coach that doesn't make the tournament for 5 years and still keep his job?
No, they wouldn't probably, but here's the different deal. Lorenzo Romar is loyal to University of Washington. And he's done a lot of good things for the school that's never been done before.
They gave him loyalty. So this, I love Lorenzo Romar. He was very, very good to me. All right. And yes. I think he understands this too, by the way he was talking in his interview. That
he does. And he'd never say bad thing about anybody.
Year with Markelle Fultz. They gave him an extra year with Markelle Fultz. Okay. Based on the same rationale.
I just don't agree.
Number one player in the nation.
I just don't agree. I'll tell you what, go ahead.
What's going to be different? You can't promise me anything's going to be different. You can't prove anything's going to be different just because
no one can prove it. Let me explain to you why it would be different.
He's going to be great. He's going to be the number one pick. But that doesn't mean
they're going to win
the Pac-12 because you got Michael Porter Jr.
This isn't me talking. This is people on the Husky basketball coaching staff talking that I've talked to. Okay. This is why they were going to be different this year. Because Noah Dickerson and Michael Porter, along with a supporting cast of a real deep front line with Jonte Porter,
right,
Mamadou Diarra, and, of course, Sam Timmons, a deep front line, was going to make a big difference in what they were having problems with this last year. Number two, adding Cameron Dollar was going to help him coach. Do you know that his stats, his defensive coaching stats last year at Seattle U were among the best in the country? They had great defensive coaching stats. So, basically, they would have improved defensively, more than likely. But most importantly, they would have just been so much more talented. They had an insufficient amount of talent. That's all there was to it. They just didn't have it. They had basically one or two guys that could produce and a bunch of other guys that were kind of struggling going through sophomore slumps. Now, they were talented guys that looked good coming in as freshmen, and they had the potential, guys like Matisse Thybulle, David Crisp. Okay, but they just had bad years, and they were kind of playing out of position a lot of times. So you bring in a group of guys that increase the talent level significantly, Dejon Davis, Jalen Noel. You've seen all these guys play. Okay, they would have increased the amount of talent
a
lot.
My point is they're all freshmen. They're all freshmen.
True.
That's my point.
But they would have been, they would have had more depth, more talent, and more experience. They would have been twice as experienced because all of those three guys that were there with DeJounte Murray would have been juniors. They would have also had Timmons and Carlos Johnson back, who would have been sophomores. They would have been a lot more experienced on top of being a lot deeper and a lot more talented.
I don't know. We don't really know. See, this is the other thing about speculation. You don't really know who stays out of those kids when they bring in all five of those kids. Because those kids come into play. You get what I'm saying? That's the way it works.
That's a very good point. Go ahead, John. Jump in. Go ahead, John. What do you say?
Well, ultimately, we don't know. And we're not ever going to know.
True.
So that's kind of where we're getting at. And that's one reason why I listen to your show, Jim, is, you'll admit to that point, but you'll still argue on behalf of a viewpoint that a lot of fans share. And that's important. Just to kind of get into that a little bit more deeply, here's a stat for you. So in that win against Kansas and in what was basically a charity game, not a lot of defense played, Jonte, his brother Michael, and Blake Harris, kind of the three recruits that were coming to Washington, they went 14-50 for shooting. That's both field goals and three-point shooting. 14-50, that's 28%. So here's some freshmen, in a game. That's an inconsistent performance. Now, one of the things that I love about Michael, and I've never seen a better high school player in my life, and, granted, I haven't watched a lot of basketball. I'm kind of a new fan of Husky basketball relative to a lot of older fans, but I've never seen a better player. And what I loved about that team, that Nathan Hale team, was they were gamers. When the game was on the line, they would come back and they would win. Michael would sink shots. Jonte would sink shots. They would find a way to win. And that could be the coaching. A lot of people knock on Brandon as a coach. I think he was an excellent coach. And I think part of why they win was who he was as a coach. Are they going to get the same from Quanzo Martin at Missouri? I would love to see a game between the Huskies and Missouri. That can happen if we make the NCAA tournament this year. A lot of people say not likely. on the blog. We got people, so we're running a contest on the blog. Just a little plug for that. It's a win-loss record contest, and we got we got ranges of guesses anywhere from 8-23, and 2-16 in conference, all the way up to 10-21, and you know, maybe one person higher, which would be me, but that's just because I'm a super fan, right? Thanks, Jim.
It's true.
You know, and then you know, we kind of say, hey, where's Romar going to find room for the okay. Hopkins is looking at the same thing next year. You know, he's bringing in, I think, four players now, Nate Roberts, Jamal Bey, and a couple of others. I forget the names right now.
He's bringing in Ed Chang, who's playing at Garfield, and he's also bringing in Elijah Hardy from down the Bay Area. But I get where you're coming from. It's just that those aren't the same kind of players – really, as the kind of guys, the UW recruiting class of 2017, before they got dismantled, was the number two or the number one class, depending on which publication you believe, next to Kentucky. We kind of scotched over the fact that Kentucky has a unique way of recruiting, that they've been doing this for forever, and a unique system with John Calipari that's had one, just a whole slew of one and dones that are all top 10 picks or all number one first round picks every single year. But the thing is, that's what Lorenzo went up against with the crew of assistants that he assembled and competed with and was able to bring in. And I thought it was a complete blunder not to allow him to use them. Granville feels differently. And so I thought we had a great discussion. I'd like to give you an opportunity to take the last word, Granville. What do you think?
It's all speculation. I mean, they could have come in and went to the Final Four. Who knows? My position was that, based upon the body of work for the last 3 to 4 years and the talent that Lorenzo Romar did recruit, they underperformed. And so, Jim Cohn, I think the success, I'll say this too, I think the success of Chris Peterson didn't help Lorenzo Romar either, because
or Donald Trump probably.
Getting...
let's go to the quick. I mean, let me tell you something right now, Granville. Okay, I listened to Husky Boosters talk. I listened to Husky Boosters talk for the past year and say mealy mouth things about Lorenzo Romar. And let's just say that the era of Trump was not lost on their political beliefs either. And there was so much dissatisfaction within that community, and it was just – Lorenzo, I think, got heaped. You make some very good points, to be honest with you, I believe. You make some excellent points, Granville, I believe. What do you think? Do you think there's anything of that factor in it?
I mean, the success of Chris Peterson bringing in Jen Cohn, she's a new – and here's the other thing, too, guys. I'm close friends with Trent Johnson. Played at Franklin High School. We grew up together.
Yep.
Coached at Stanford,
yep.
LSU, TCU. He told me a long time ago, like when he was at Stanford, he's like,
yep.
If they hire a new athletic director, I know I'm gone. Because the new athletic director wants to bring in their coach. That's just how it goes.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah.
All I can say now is they brought in Hopkins. If they had to get rid of Lorenzo, I think Hopkins is a great choice. I'll tell you, I didn't see as much energy any time last year in practice as I did in this practice. That I went to on Thursday, and that had a lot to do with Cameron Dollar. Okay, that had a lot to do with him. But you have to give it to the head coach for empowering the assistant coach, right?
Right. True.
Right? So you give him credit for
that. I don't
know
if I'm ready to concede
to
be honest. Go ahead.
My thing is this. What we have to look forward to, will Hopkins be successful with the 2-3 zone? How long will it take him to recruit the personnel to play the 2-3 zone? Will the Pac-12 be able to adjust to the 2-3 zone on limited preparation time? It's not something that they'll see regularly. and they'll have a limited time to prepare for it. That will be, I think, an advantage for the University of Washington and maybe give Hopkins time to win games and be able to recruit the players that he needs to have to make that thing work. I affectionately call it Syracuse West.
I think that's a great statement. I think those are three excellent questions going into the season for Washington. I'm going to add another question going into the career of Mike Hopkins, and that is, how long will he stay at Washington once the Syracuse job opens? That's been a rumor that's been circulated for a long time by a lot of people over the course of this last 6 months that he's been around. And the other thing is, you know, he's a guy that's, you know, that's come into this program and he's done some positive things. But a lot of the people I know that are close to the program, people that are professional basketball players that came out of the Romar program, none of them were consulted on this firing by Jan Cohen from what I hear. And I think it was a blunder to do it at this point. I think it would have been better to give him another year. She didn't see it. You don't see it. And I believe that you're an informed guy, and I trust
I think you're well informed.
I'm not trying to say you don't have a right to your opinion. Your opinion is strong. You're a basketball guy, and I like your background. But I just don't agree with you. I think that it was a mistake to not bring these guys in.
I'm not saying Lorenzo couldn't have won with those guys. I'm saying there was nothing that led up to saying that it could actually happen. Like, it could or it couldn't. That's my thing. If he had had, like, if he was 1 year removed from the tournament, yeah. 2 years removed from the tournament and didn't get in because the NCAA didn't honor the fact that we had the best record in the Pac-12. And then give us a berth. Okay, yeah, but those were a long time ago. Those weren't recent. And so,
well, they were one free throw. They were literally one free throw away from making the tournament with Andrew Andrews' senior year. You can look at it, and that was three different times. You know, yeah.
I get that, but that's still your team failing. The year that they were the Pac-12 champion and didn't get in, that's ludicrous. I mean, that's. As you can't blame that on the coach. You can blame players missing free throws on the coach. Coach, how come your kids can't make free throws?
Yeah,
can blame that when he puts in someone like an inexperienced guard like Dan Kingma for game-winning free throws, and he's never been in that clutch situation before.
Yeah,
you know,
those are the moves that get you fired. You're correct, John.
Right, but that
you know
the
other thing. I'm looking forward to energy.
Okay, go ahead. Danny Kingma wasn't one of the free throws that cost them to getting in the NCAA tournament. The free throws that were missed that cost them in the NCAA tournament were from Andrew Andrews.
Right.
And it was on two different occasions. Yeah,
that can bring
true.
Down a team morale. You know, if Coach Hopkins brings that energy, I haven't seen Lorenzo take off his coat in a while. You know, I've seen him tug at it a few times. If that's all you're going to do is tug at your coat when you're getting, you know, bad calls from the refs in a really important game, you're not doing enough. Will Conroy was too quiet on that bench. You know, I hope Hopkins brings some energy. I hope he walks up and down that bench and riles up those players and gets them out there ready to play and do battle. I hope Will Conroy steps up. I hope Cameron Dollar steps up. I hope they're active in coaching these kids on the floor. You know, I'm looking forward to that energy. I'm looking forward to some timely timeout calls. You know, I don't want to see a 10-point lead evaporate with no timeouts. You know, I always look at other coaches in the Pac-12, Sean Miller especially, you know, calling great timeouts, just killing a momentum after maybe a 4-point run. And so I think I look forward to that. We can't do anything about the past. So I think a lot of people are looking forward to this season, to Coach Hopkins. You know, I'd like to get into talking about the players, Sam Timmons, you know, what he did in FIBA Asia Cup this summer, you know, how he's going to come back stronger. You know, he should average a double-double. You know, he should be at that point.
Speaking of tugging on coats, someone's tugging on this phone right now. I got to get going. And, I mean, we didn't even really get started. Granville, you guys both were really, really great guests today, and I really appreciate you both coming on the show. Granville, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
You bet. And thank you, John, for coming on and helping us fill out the show. And we'll definitely be seeing you, but hopefully both in the future. And this is a great time talking to you guys. And for Talking Hoops. This is Jim Bass Night, and we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.